That's called a silence of moment, because we have lost our Uncle Cathy, who has played his role in our country, which is immeasurable. Also, our hero of our liberation struggle. Can we rise for a silence of moment, please? May his soul rest in peace. Honorable members, let me greet also the media and everyone who is with us. Some may didn't indicate who are they, but we do welcome all of you in this meeting of Sport and Recreation. We do have apologies. Some other members of this committee are serving in another committee. They've taken oversight. We do have an apology of Honorable Muteka. We do have an apology of Honorable Jaisa. Do have an apology of Honorable Mabika and an apology for Honorable Filtan. And Honorable Bev Adams. Abrahams, I'm sorry. Here is agenda in front of you, Honorable Members. Can somebody propose the adoption of our agenda? Honorable Valcomi.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Any seconder? Honorable Domo. On that order. Okay, thank you. Honorable members, we didn't take our own oversight because of very important other entities whom were thinking that before we go for our debate, as we are going to go from to our strategy and then department briefing us, we need to see. So today and tomorrow, we do have committees. Today with us, we are having Cricket South Africa. I would love that the one who is leading the delegation, they must introduce themselves in order that they must take us through. We are going to look at our presentation documents when they are presented. with those words, I do welcome all of you in this meeting. I thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of this committee, on this day of the passing of one of our eminent leaders of our people, let me say good morning to you all. I lead a delegation from Cricket South Africa, a delegation that is made up of the following individuals: the Deputy President, the Vice President, Thabang Morowe, the second from my left, Mrs. Zola Tamaya, member of the Board of Directors, next to me, the Chief Executive Officer of CSA, Mr. Harun Lokat, Manager for Transformation and Stakeholder Relations, Mr. Max Jordan. Then my name is Chris Nanzani. I'm the Chairman and President of CSA. We have invited to come before the committee and were given a very simple brief that we are going to try today to explain and talk through that brief. And I'm hoping that members have received the necessary documents before we go through the presentation, so that as we go through our brief and our presentation, it would be prudent for members to raise questions, and then maybe during that kind of an interaction, things would become much clearer. Just by way of introduction, Honorable Chair, this board has been in office since February 2013, and when it came into office, we decided on doing things differently, promoting good governance within the system, attending to the key aspects of our mandate. And one of the things that we did was to re-engineer our business. We paired that on two issues, the operating model that we have, as well as the funding model that we have, which focuses on governance, administration, finance, development, transformation, and the results that are beginning to show indicate that we are on the right way, even though the challenges going forward are still very, very huge and require a lot of attention from our side. Currently, our men's national team, which is the flagship of our organization, lies third in the test match cricket rating, number one in the ODI cricket rating, and number three in the T20 format. You will recall, Madam Chair, that sometime last year, around about July, we're lying 7-6 in the test match ranking. And we have been finding and battling our way back to the top. The current series, if we win, we're going to lie number 2 in the test ranking. And if we win at the end of the year against India, we might be lying number 1. Also of importance and of note for us is the progress that our women's national team is making. More especially if you look at the context and also the historical context within which they have been playing for the last few years and the initiatives that were put in place. For instance, now we are able to contract 14 players on a full-time basis for the women's national team, which is an achievement that was not there in the past. And what it has done, it has made sure that at any given point in time that you require players for that team, you get them. Because in the past, you had to compete with the employees, the players had to negotiate leave, but that is no longer a problem going forward. Currently, they're sitting at number 6 in the ICC International Women's Challenge. And recently, at the qualifier for the World Cup that was held in Sri Lanka, they finished number 2. And also, 2 years ago, we introduced what we call the Africa T20 Cup, which begins to look at emerging players, players that are on the periphery and also of the national team and the franchise setup, players that are emerging from our semi-pro level, and also incorporating some African countries. And that tournament has run for the second time this past year. And we started it in 2015, and it has grown from 2015 to 2016. It has become a very important system and tournament within our system. And what it does, it offers opportunities to young players, especially talented cricketers, and it includes all our affiliates, 13 of them, and 3 African countries. Transformation, as you recall and remember, Madam Chair, when we were here last time, that was also a topical issue. Remains a key pillar of our overall business, and we're currently exploring how best to deal with diversity training, management throughout our cricketing system. Because if you want to make an impact on transformation, you need to change people's mindsets. And if you want to make impact on the on transformation, you need to ensure that your system talks the same language, the same message. That is why we're talking about diversity management, diversity, and encouraging diversity, and also thinking that begins to support and ensure that transformation is sustainable. Then we've created, or we've started over the last 4 years or so, 3 years or so, what we call HUBS program. Let me explain this concept. For many years, development of cricket has been based on schools. And the reason for that are obvious. But what the challenges that we see currently is that that system is no longer yielding the results that it ought to yield. Now, what we're doing, for instance, we have situations where in rural areas schools are closing down, where teachers are leaving those rural areas, where you find a school might own, which used to be a cricketing school, might only have few teachers who may not coach cricket. Now, what we have done, we've created centers which we fund from our own budget, which we manage from our own national office, provincial offices, as well as affiliate offices. And these centers will be run by CSA, and they create opportunities for schools to send their talent to these centers, where they will receive coaching, where ideally they should be playing a minimum of 20 games in a season, which is not enough, but at least it's a start. We're coming from a situation where in the whole season, a school or a hub will play 4 games. Now at least we have 20 games that we play. And if you compare that with some of the advantage schools where they play more than 40 games a season, it's not comparable. But what we're doing with the hubs, we're trying to offer opportunities to the schools around the hub so that they can have coaching, they can have their top players coached at a different level and also play for the hub. Then the hubs fall under what we call the regional performance center, which is now where the hubs will affiliate, and when the best players from the hubs, the collection of hubs, I'm sure in one of the slides this might have gone to explain better, you have these best players playing now for the regional performance center, which would be now your level higher up the hub. Now what we've done, CSA is engaging potential sponsors to try and get to a situation where each hub could have a funder in a program that we say, we call it adopt a hub. So that you cannot, remember, everything needs resources. And our resources are not limitless. But we're trying to encourage people who can make a change, people who can make a contribution to adopt a hub. It may be individuals, it may be corporate, and the CEO has been telling me recently that we might be announcing a sponsor for the hub, but that sponsor is not going to be exclusive, because you do not want exclusivity, so that you want everybody to come in, or any other corporate to come in and engage and provide funding for the hub. And these issues will be expanded on as we present, as we go forward. And now I'll hand over to the CEO just to take us through the next slide. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, the CEO.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everybody. on the financial slide, Madam Chair, I know the red does not read well. Those are expenditures or losses. But it's important to understand that we operate our business and the budget on what we call a 4-year cycle, because our revenue is dependent on the inbound tours. If we have a strong country that tours South Africa, we generate much better revenue. If you take, for example, in the past year where Sri Lanka had toured us, it's not regarded as a financially very strong tour, and therefore you see in the financial year 2017, we're projecting a loss of 220 million. But if you go back over the four-year period and you total all those figures, we generate a surplus of 61 million. So it's not possible for us to just look at 1 year at a time and think we've not done well or we've done very well. We've got to balance that over a period because we have good tours and we have bad tours, resulting in strong revenue flows or weaker revenue flows. The next slide indicates the sources of our funding. The majority, which is the blue block, is our professional income. Our flagship property would be the Proteus. The majority of that income is generated by the Proteus. There's a little bit of income that we generate from our investments and amateur income. But by and large, all of our money is generated from the national Proteus team. A lot of that is where it comes. The slide on expenditure gives you an idea of where we spend our money. Professional cricket takes virtually half of the funding that we've got. It's all of the domestic cricket, all of the women's cricket, all of the national team is in fact separate. We spend about 9% of our money on maintaining the national team. That would include player contracts, the travel accommodation subsistence of those teams, the equipment and so on. Administration is roughly 8% of our costs, and then the balance of about a third or 30% of our expenditure goes into amateur or development cricket. So I think, Madam Chair, for me to say that after we've re-looked at the business that we run, the operating model, the way we fund, the way we control our expenses, I'm very pleased to report that we are in a healthy position. We've, over the last 3 or 4 years, managed to fund all of our activities. We've expanded the number of our activities. And so far, so good, is what I can say, on the funding side.
Thank you, CEO. Any other contributor? Bedingfield, honorable member, chairperson and members. If we come to the overview of the governance of at Cricket South Africa, we have designed something that we called an operating model, which is activity-based funding. You tell us your plans, and you implement according to your plans, and we fund you according to your plans. We don't fund for something that it's not implementable. And that has, you know, in 2014 has aided all our members to record at least a break even, because some of the people have struggled big time. But we said, come up with your activity base and we see how we can make your plans workable, and then you can implement them. Now, the implementation which the President has alluded to is the cricket hub and regional performing centers. You would recall, perhaps you have seen on media, that we have had the Momentum Friendship Game that happened in Port Elizabeth, and it happened in Bloemfontein, and it happened in Alexandra. That's where we are saying we're building bridges. It's still in a pilot form. But that's where you see players coming from a hub, from a disadvantaged area. They are, excuse me, they are in a position to play with their counterparts, the ones that we say they've been in the Model C. They have plenty of facilities and other things. So they play together so that we build those bridges at a very early stage. This is what is happening. It has taken place, and it was successful in those three areas that I have mentioned. And you would recall that in 2013, we had our transformation in Durban, And last time when the team from the Cricket South Africa was here, they gave a briefing out of that. And we are confident and we can say that we have implemented the 43 Cricket South Africa transformation resolutions. Amongst others, the key successes, they will include your sustainable governance, operating and funding model for cricket. Of course, there must be accountability to everything that we are doing. It's one of our values. If there's no accountability in what we are doing, you're wasting funds. And there's a team that is looking at that. I will also explain further. Member governance and strategies aligned that of Cricket South Africa. A geopolitical alignment at member level, it's nearing completion. You remember that SASCOC requested that we should operate in our geopolitical boundaries. It's not easy for places like in the Western Cape, because you've got your southwestern district, you've got your Boland, and then you've got your Cape Town, Western Cape, excuse me, as a whole. So it's quite ambiguous. It's very big in terms of traveling as well. It's not easy, but it's nearing completion. Grassroots cricket development on track. I think you are all aware that we've got a KFC mini cricket where many kids are playing at that level. From the clubs, from the schools, from these centers, they come and play. That is huge. We are seeing the numbers that are growing year in, year out. We've got an increased number of black African players and franchises and national teams, and that is so evident in what is happening. You look at the game yesterday that there was a Momentum One Day Cup played between the VKB Knights and the Warriors. You must have seen the number of black African players that played there and the people of stature. They are not playing there because they are black, but they've got what it takes. They are talented. The stats are there. You can see for yourself. So we are growing in that regard. It's not questionable anymore. We set the policy and there are implementers in the office under the leadership of our CE and Max Jordan. They make it a point that when the board puts a policy in place and approves it, they are there to implement it. And it's happening the way it should. The Momentum players, they've played 23 matches and Kobberies in 2-6 in previous season. I mean, it means there are resources that have been put to enable that we should get more games. The more you play, the more you better your skills. It is international. And then we celebrated 25 years of unity in cricket, culminating in 84 ex-players awarded with the Cricket South Africa Heritage Blazer. If you go to the governance structure in Cricket South Africa, I'll start at the top with the Members' Council, where you have 14 member presidents, of which I'm one of them as a president of Free State Cricket. Going down, and then it's Board of Directors. The Board of Directors, that's where now Mr. President is leading that team, with the inclusion of 5 independent directors, so that we are having people that are not cricket orientated and focusing only on cricket, but also looking at good governance. Are we doing the right thing? Because we cannot be referees and the players at the same time, otherwise we blow our own trumpets. So there are those people, the independent directors, and their profile, it's quite a good one. And there's a process also that has been followed to select and appoint those independent directors. And then beneath that, you will have an audit and risk committee to audit everything that we are doing, finances, how we conduct our business. And then there will be a remuneration and HR committee looking at is there value for money, what you are doing, your job description, your KPIs, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing, are you getting paid for what you are doing. We also have finance and commercial committee. This is what the president, the CE is talking about, that we're looking for sponsors, especially for adopt a hub. So that's one other commercial committee. Cricket pipeline committee is spearheaded by the gentleman on my left, the young Mr. Taram Murray. He is the vice president, so he's the one that is heading that committee to look at our pipeline. Is it in the right direction? Cricket committee, social and ethics committee. It's one of the compliance issues. If you are an organization and you don't have, you know, you don't uphold the social and ethics, then you are lost. So we are having that. Transformation committee. There is a manager, he has been introduced, Mr. Max Jordan is taking care of them. And then who oversees everything that I've mentioned is the CE, the chief executive, Mr. Harold Logan. And then he has a executive committee and then medical and research committee. That is how we are structured. If I go further to say the Cricket South Africa Board committees, how we are crafted, the committees that audit and risk that I've mentioned, the chairperson is an independent one, and then we've got three members. I'm not sure whether I need to say it's three committees, but at least you've got a gist of what is happening within this one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Anyone want to contribute?
Yes, Honorable Chair. The next issue, the next slide, is a very important slide for us. That talks about the EPG processes that focus on transformation. I'm sure the committee is quite familiar with that process. And the committee will recall that April 2016, the minister made a determination for 2015-2016. And out of the information and data that at that stage was available, the minister made announced a sanction against cricket, that cricket would not be allowed to bid and host international events, except to play on what we call the Future Tours program. That was a shocker for us. And I said to him, when I met him, that it was a bombshell, because on the day he made the announcement, I was arriving in the country back from Dubai. But what we said at cricket is that we are not going to get into a media frenzy campaign to try and justify what has happened and try to put our case across. Instead, what we're going to do, we're going to sit down and get to work and understand the gaps that are there, understand the processes that have taken place. And also understanding that we had come into that process on our own and we had set targets on our own, that we had entered into an agreement with the minister. And unfortunately, we could not deliver on those targets. One of the issues that we had to engage on with the minister and the EPG secretariat in particular was the issue of the scorecard that was used. And we held the view that the scorecard cannot be a one-size-fits-all, because it has certain key aspects that it neglected when it dealt with cricket. And we engage them. If you look at the score, we removed from 29 to 1. Then through engagement between our office and the EPG Secretariat, we moved from 51 to 42. And we had agreed with the EPG that there has to be a scorecard that takes into account the entirety of cricket system. Let me give you an example. The scorecard that was used mainly focused in the main on the national team, and they did not focus on the professional setup where you have 6 franchises that are playing professional cricket, where if you were to include the data that comes at that level, the score would totally be different. And also, if you're looking at the same aspects that were monitored and that we were assessed on the scorecard, one of the issues would be your under 17 national team, your under 19 national team, your under 18 national team. Some of these issues are not really applicable to cricket. So we engaged APG until we get to a stage where we had enough information to say we've reached consensus. And based on that consensus in terms of the scorecard that is going to be used, the kind of data that we have to submit, and also the kind of evaluation and assessment system that is in place, from our own understanding, what you see on the extreme right of your slide, when the minister makes a determination, that would be very close to what they would also have as the EPG, which says that at least we have moved. And we wish to commend that process and the ministry for one thing, that what that did in the entire cricketing system was to force everybody to realize that the time to do things in the normal way has come to an end, that you need to commit on this important function of transformation, and you need to make it work, and you need to make sure that your system buys into this and your system commits to this. It's not an issue for conferences and meetings, an issue for implementation. And that is what the EPG processes have made our system to realize. And also, it also emphasized and also reinforced the decisions that we had taken at the national setup as the national authority that governs cricket in the country, and it reinforced that, and it made our system from the top to the bottom to understand and speak with one voice on the issues of transformation. I'm sure Meg can talk more, or Harun can talk more on the issues that relate to the processes and tail, but I'm looking at the overview around the EPG.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think, Madam Chair, the President correctly said what we chose to do was to constructively engage. There's no question what the EPG and the sanction that was meted out to us, we considered unfair, but it certainly brought a serious focus from everybody within cricket to pay attention to this aspect. And that got us to work with the EPG Secretariat to redesign the scorecard. Because as the chairman said, something that fits for swimming wouldn't fit for a sport like cricket. And we're very satisfied now that we've got a scorecard that better measures the progress that we're doing. And that's the expectation that we've got coming out when the next assessment comes, that we will be in the 90-plus percent in terms of meeting our targets. I think what's also important here, when this EPG process started, it was 5 codes of sports that were invited on a pilot study basis. And even at the early stage when we submitted our data and our information, we ourselves were not confident with the reliability of it because our systems didn't have that kind of data collection. And one of the other benefits of the whole EPG process has been that we've got a far more reliable and a better data management system, which we invested in for the last couple of years. So to give you an example of why we say the data was not reliable at the outset, in the old Cricket South Africa model, for example, schools or our affiliates, our provinces, used to be funded on how many schools you've got. So if you've got 10 schools or 1,000 schools and we're paying 10,000 each, you'll get 100,000 rand. So what happened was some of our members started to inflate those numbers. And we did not have an audit of those numbers. And when we then discovered the real numbers, the original target that we had presented to the minister was obviously not accurate because our base and our background was not accurate. I'm pleased to say that all of that is now fixed. So where we are sitting now with this whole EBD process is in a far better space. It was unfortunate that we got sanctioned. We thought it was not appropriate, but it brought focus to the cricket system. And I think with all the work that's been done now, I would be surprised if the EPG Secretariat or the Minister didn't compliment the work that Cricket South Africa has done to put these house together in terms of data reliability, in terms of projecting, and in terms of getting a scorecard that works. And in fact, most importantly, as the President said, actually implementing the transformational issues that we want to. There was no difference or no disagreement on the world to transform. There were challenges with respect to data and scoring and so on, and we fixed all of that.
Thank you. Any other contribution?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Madam Chair, I will just give a further explanation to how our hubs and RTC programs work, together with the pipeline that we have designed for cricket to enable our young boys and ladies to be able to represent the country. So as Cricket South Africa, when we decided to change our strategy in terms of how we were developing our players or how we were basically trying to create the appetite for mass participation in cricket, one of the ideas that we came up with was forming these hubs as well as the RPCs, which are your regional performance centers. How the hubs idea came about was that in our rural and developmental areas, as well as your township areas, we had problems where you would have, in one area, individuals who would not be able to form a team. So you would have anything between 1 and 10 of individuals who, in a specific area, that would be interested in playing cricket, but they do not necessarily form a team. So what we then do, or what we then did in that instance, is that we would then partner these individuals with individuals in the area closest to them to then try and form a team. And this resulted in us coming up with an idea of forming these hubs. So these hubs are basically designed for your township as well as rural areas where we can take a bunch of individuals, group them together to form a hub. And then in this hub, you would have different age group teams, from under 9 all the way to under 19. So now, what would happen in that case is that we would take the best performing individuals from a hub, take them into one of our early incubation system, which is a regional performance center. That's more or less your semi-provincial team, where these individuals will now start to compete with much tougher opposition in terms of your traditionally formed cricket schools as well as other provincial teams and other regional performance centers. So this idea basically came about because we wanted to cast our net as far wide as we possibly could as Cricket South Africa. And at the same time, we wanted to be strategic in our approach because we realized that erecting fields of play as well as nets is not necessarily the answer to the problems that we face as cricket, because you can go into an area where there's only 5 or 10 individuals, as I've explained earlier, and erect a wicket there or a set of nets, but it's not good for these individuals if they're not going to get any game time, because what's important is time in the middle more than practice itself. So we then came about with the idea of strategically approaching these rural as well as your township areas by grouping them together so that these individuals can then have a minimum of guaranteed 20 matches per season. Whereas in the past, as our president had earlier alluded, some of these kids would only play 4 matches per season. So a typical example of a school like Bishops, a King Edward's, or Rondebosch boys,
pre-season matches, they have about 19. This is before season starts. So on average, any white kid out there that plays cricket, before their season has started, they've already played close to 20 matches, if not more. Whereas to in your rural or your township areas, a kid would have played four the entire season. So now when you get to your provincial competition, you are expecting, or we, at least as cricket, were expecting young boys and girls who had only played four matches for the entire season to now get to this stage where they're competing with somebody who's played close to 60, 70 matches per season. So that's really not giving them any opportunity to compete at all. So that was just an opportunity to participate. So we realized that we need to fix our house as Cricket South Africa to enable these young boys and girls an opportunity to then compete. So what that meant was giving them a guaranteed minimum of 20 matches in a season. And this is just only for the hubs and the RPCs. So the more you grow into the system, if you, for instance, now play for, if you get selected to play for a provincial team, that's when now you play more matches as an individual. And as Cricket South Africa, we're spending a minimum of 300,000 per hub. So if you round up the numbers that we have, that's easily over 150, that's over the hubs only. That's about 21 million that we're spending on hubs. The challenge still remains for us in rural areas, transport time for the kids, because with greater distances to travel, to go to practice or to meet with your teammates in these hubs and RPCs, comes the sacrifice that the kid needs to make in terms of leaving school early. So that's been a great challenge for us in rural areas where greater distances need to be traveled for kids in order for them to participate in practices as well as in matches. We are, however, working hard to try and eliminate as many of these problems that we come across to make sure that we make it better for all the individuals concerned, the kids as well as the coaches and parents, of course. At the moment, we have an average of 6 primary schools as well as 4 senior schools that would form a hub. We are trying to increase these numbers, as my respected colleagues here have alluded earlier, that the funding that we are using now for all our members is an activity-based funding model. So this funding model basically works, it's a year backwards. What you do this year, you get rewarded for in the upcoming year. So if you are a Western Cape Cricket Association and you use 1 million for development cricket this year, because we are now able to measure the work that you have done as an affiliate of Cricket South Africa, we then reimburse you with that 1 million that you have used. I know the question will then come, how do you now help this person grow? Because now 1 million and you're getting 1 million back, it basically means you can't grow. What we have done at Cricket South Africa is that we also put a rewards program in place where members that are submitting their reports on time, members that are executing their plans accordingly, get rewarded an extra amount of money. This is how now we allow our affiliates and members to grow. And if you can put in paper as well plans of how your area is going to grow, even if you don't have the funding and you would like CSA to basically assist you in funding the growth that you anticipate in your area or that you have sufficient plans for, we do delve into your plan and we do assist in helping our members grow by funding, obviously, and assisting with personnel. So in 2016 and 2017, I'm happy to report that from our hubs and RPC programs, we had 138 individuals going forward to represent their provincial team in all our national weeks. So this is a significant growth for us as Cricket South Africa. It's still a very small number if you look at it in terms of comparison to the number of people that are participating, but we are hoping that going forward, this number will definitely double, if not triple in number. We're working very hard to make sure that we're keeping our pipeline very strong. So the next slide, which basically is a pyramid slide, will show you the developmental plan that we have at Cricket South Africa in terms of how we plan to grow our kids as far as cricket is concerned. So this pyramid is not only developed for players, but it also works the same way for our coaches as well as administrators. we'll have people getting, we have mass participation rather at level one, which shows your mini cricket, the RPCs and hubs, as well as your school's cricket RPCs and hubs. So where we obviously do not have school teams, we have area teams, which will be formed using this hubs and RPC formula. So in level one, that's where we are now taking mass participation and taking it through to hardball cricket. We are now moving kids away from modified cricket into playing hardball cricket, where now the rules are a bit more stringent and need to be adhered to, where now there is a bit more focus in the sort of coaching that we give to these young boys and girls. There is a change in the equipment that they use. And luckily with the current sponsor that we have in New Balance, we have been able to give free equipment to all these young boys and girls in our township as well as rural areas. And we are trying to make sure that as Cricket South Africa that this program keeps going in terms of awarding these kids with the kits that they need to help them grow in our sport. And then the second transition is a further developmental phase into a community sport. This will now also include our club system. This is where our young players normally decide if cricket is a sport of choice for them and a career that they would like to focus to. So needless to say that this is where now the coaching gets a bit more professional in terms of these young boys and girls having access to the Cricket South Africa High Performance Center, where they will now be also be taken to your camps, where we give more focus into these kids. We have what we have, what we call a player performance plan. With this player performance plan, we basically look at the needs analysis of a player, what it will take to take a young Thabang Moore from just being a provincial cricket player into a professional cricket player. So we also look at the soft side of cricket, or the soft side of life, if I may put it that way, for this one specific player. If it means that, because sometimes it's unfortunate that we'll have a very good player coming from a broken home, if it means that we must afford this player a psychologist that will help them along the way, we do that. That's what the player performance plan is there for. If there is no food at home, the player performance plan is there to make sure that we buy groceries for these families so that this kid is able to perform with at least a half-full stomach rather than an empty one. If this kid doesn't have cricket spikes, if they don't have a bat, if they need a school bag, a backpack for their school books, this is what this player performance plan is there for, to make sure that this individual can at least walk amongst their community with pride. In that way, it makes it easier for them to perform on the cricket field, because sometimes you find an individual who is brilliant as far as cricket is concerned, but their mind is not necessarily in the game because of the problems that they face in life. So we developed what we call a player performance plan so that we can be able to tackle these challenges for these players as well as coaches. What we also do not mention here is that we have what we call a talent acceleration program. A talent acceleration program is basically a program for us that helps us focus predominantly on black African cricketers and to fast-track them as far as our structures are concerned, so that these individuals are ready to perform at a higher level than where we would have taken them before we put them into this talent acceleration program. Another figure that we didn't mention here is the fact that as Cricket South Africa, we have also agreed to increase our spending for our pipeline by 115 million over the next 3 years. What this figure is going to do for us, or how is it going to help us, is that it's going to help us in taking our provincial coaches in every area and making sure that these provincial coaches are now aligned with our RPC program, where now these kids in rural and township areas are going to have access to provincial coaches to coach them. This is now, again, another part of our talent acceleration program where we are now saying you don't necessarily have to be the best in your region to get access to good coaching. We are now trying to compete with the private schools, because if you look at the private schools in cricket, you will notice that the majority of the coaches that they have are coaches that were produced by us. These are coaches that come from the rural areas. These are coaches that come from the township areas. But because we were not, as cricket, paying these coaches well enough, and I'm now talking competitive salaries, these coaches then went to go to these private schools where they were not getting paid. So on average, in a provincial or an affiliate, a coach would be earning anything between 2,500 to 4,000 rands a month. So now with this talent acceleration program and this 115 million that we've approved as a board to spend towards this, coaches are now going to earn between 7,500 to 13,000 a month. These are now competitive salaries for our coaches in order for them to now have that interest of going back to the township and coach. Whereas in the past, that interest died because of having to feed their families back home. We couldn't really expect our coaches to do much with the amount of money we were paying them. So now with this money that we are now proposing, we are hoping to entice some of these best coaches that we have lost to come back into our program and help these kids out, and especially help our programs out by producing some of the finest and best talents from rural as well as township areas. The third transition, as far as our pyramid is concerned, deals with the actual take-up of players into the semi-professional as well as the franchise cricket system. So at the moment, we only have six franchise teams, but with the plans that we have put in place, the activity-based funding, how we measure, the audit that we do in terms of the numbers that we keep, how we spend our money, we do have plans of increasing the number of franchise teams that we have from six to a specific number in the future. We're not sure what the right number will be, but when the time is ready, that announcement will be made. But we do definitely have plans of expanding the number of franchise teams that we have as Cricket South Africa, because it is the right thing to do. We our cricket base is growing exponentially, so we need to make sure that when these individuals that we keep bringing into our systems are ready to play for professional teams, there is opportunity for them, and we're not just asking them to fight for a few positions that would be in just six teams. So we are looking at increasing the number of teams so that we increase, A, the number of support staff that we have, the number of managerial staff we have, the number of administrators that we're going to have, as well as the number of women in cricket and the number of black African players on the field of cricket. The fourth transition, as on our slide or the pyramid, will show the elite participation. This is now your international competitions in cricket. This is where 51% of Cricket South Africa's expenses is geared to create an enabling environment for peak players. The impact of winning noticeable on the psyche of population. The fifth transition is all about the well-being of players. This is this area focuses on capacity building, education, and training so that the players could transition into meaningful employment. So where players are not able to make it as proteas from the franchise system, we have programs in place. We have relationships that we have formed with various varsities like UJ, the University of Western Cape, University of Fort Hare, where we take these individuals and these varsities now give them free education. And those that are not able to get free education, they get subsidized education. And these individuals now turn into professionals in the respective field that they would choose. So they're not forced to choose a field where they can get involved with cricket. They can go into any other field that they choose to, whether it's law, whether it's engineering, any other field that they choose to. That's where we will then support them together with the relationship that we have with various varsities around the country. So this is also to help our guys in life to be able to earn that living where they can now plow back in, as far as their grassroots are concerned, in their communities, as well as obviously to be able to feed their families. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, any intake or input? Now we are keen to raise questions. Do you think that we have prevented whatever you wanted to say? Because we are going to fire in questions now. President?
Madam Chair and members, I just want to speak about
one very successful program that we've announced last year, that was our engagement with the Department of Sports and Recreation and Department of Basic Education. There is one thing that we mentioned last year, is that is an impediment for us to grow the game within disadvantaged community, and that was the issue of vandalism. Now, if we, in discussion with what we have and what the Department of Sport can do and what the Basic Education can do, I think case in point is Motherwell Eagles in Port Elizabeth. They played and they practiced on a dump site. We then identified a school where we built one of these hubs. And I think through that process, we are looking at the restoration of dignity within our disadvantaged communities. We've mentioned this, and because there's great potential in terms of working with the basic education, and they are also rolling out programs where they are quite prepared to deliver sports facilities so that we can have a structure that will deal with the issue that we have within the disadvantaged community, that is lack of support from local authorities. We are in discussion with SELGA. We will continue to discuss with SELGA. But as so far related to you, is that the funding by and large comes from the coffers of CSA. There is, with the Department of Basic Education, programs that we want to further explore, and that is through the Mindset TV. They've got channel 319. We want to use that channel to, in a distant learning way, in e-learning, deliver sports administration, coaching, and empowerment courses so that we can accelerate the process of getting people on board and growing our numbers in terms of participation.
Madam Chair, if I may just draw your attention to one other important piece of information which relates to what we refer to as our new T20 Global Destination League. You might have seen a little bit about that in the press, but just a backdrop before I go there. Out of all of the detail that we shared with you, if you just remember the hubs and RPC program as something that is fundamental to us, because we believe that's a mechanism that we could develop and spread the game far and wide. Of course, our success on that is limited by the amount of resources that we've got. But we're looking at generating sponsorship. This new league that I'm going to talk about is one such way that we believe we can bring a brand new focus into the country as a whole. This is what we're talking now about, positioning South Africa on a global stage. So I think many members would be familiar with the IPL, the Big Bash. Up until now, in the South African circuit, we've been below par on that front. But there's a reason for that. If you go back a few years, CSA was challenged with governance, administration, funding, and all of those sorts of things. The new board that came into place back in 2013 had a lot to fix in that respect. We were not ready to go onto the global stage and present ourselves and attract the best players in the world, improve tourism and all sorts of things before we had got our own house in order. So now that we have spent the last 2 or 3 years to re-engineer our business, to fix our governance, to fix our admin, our funding, we know exactly what we're doing. We are able to monitor, we are able to measure, we are able to develop a strategy and so on. We felt last year in 2016, and this has been in the planning for the past 12 to 15 months already. We're thinking, there's a timeline slide there that you will see. We've set ourselves the date of this year, 4th November, to kick off this league. And with a final on the 16th of December. We really do believe that this is an opportunity for the country to benefit, where we can almost, if you think of a World Cup coming to South Africa every year, this is what we're planning. So it's something that we've taken on as a big bite. We think we would be able to deliver. We've brought in experts from offshore, from over the other parts of the world. We are fortunate in that within the ranks of the CSA fraternity, we've got expertise, links, and so on. But we've really taken on a massive project that we think could benefit the country in a huge way. There's some benefits that we've listed in the slide. There's no question, and we've met with the Director General. We still want to meet with the Minister because we think there's an enabling opportunity also for the Ministry and for government to help us with this. This is something big. We can generate new revenue. We can bring it into the country. It's not just cricket. We're talking about tourism. We're talking about branding South Africa. And if we get it right, there'll be a lasting benefit, not only for cricket, but for the country. So this is the kind of T20 league where the best players in the world, alongside ours, will come and participate. We expect foreign engagement. We currently we're in the process of selling city-based teams. And the amount of interest that we have seen coming from abroad is quite encouraging. So there'll be 8 city-based teams. We've got in excess of 150 applicants for 8 teams. A third of those applications are from South Africa. A third of those are from the subcontinent, India in particular. And another third, 50 odd applications are scattered from across the world, including the US, Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia. So we're quite encouraged by the interest of this from private investors as well as from the US-based players. Of course, our national players, our marquee players will be participating. They're a big draw card. But we're thinking of using this new T20 league as a game changer for cricket in the country. So I was going to conclude by saying if there's 2 pieces that you remember from our presentation, right at the bottom is the Hubs and RPC program, which we see spreading the game, and right at the top is this new league that we want to use as a revenue generator.
Now let me take this opportunity, President, to welcome the presentation. I'm suspecting that you needed more that the minister must say, but to some of us, he needed that your sanctions were officially uplifted. It says more to us. I'm suspecting you are supposed to be satisfied because you have proved what EPG's course wanted you to do. Never mind that there's no one did come to you. By lifting it, it means that we have done what the department and our good self were thinking, that transformation, we're not seeing it in cricket South Africa. Honorable members, I know that they've put so many things, but to me, as a chairperson who's always leading this discussion, I'm feeling so bad that in each and every oversight, we don't get education from cricket most of the time. And that's why now, I don't know how are we going to engage with this hub development, but this is something that will take it, and especially in your learning remarks that you wanted to work together with SALCA. Because every now and then when we're doing our own oversight, we call SALCA alongside with us. You know why? Because of one other issue that we don't see happening of the MEEC, the grant funding. So as I'm sitting here, I know you're only mentioning three provinces. And that we have started, but I wanted to tell you that as a chairperson, who's a chairperson of National Committee, I know that in one province, which is Eastern Cape, I know that you're assisting in Aiduja, in Ngombela. It's a township, but I've been looking and seeing that in Alice, there are still very interesting on cricket, but I've seen that they don't have the grounds there. Just playing in grass land. I wish that as a national chairperson, I would love to check what is going on there. And then also, I'm aware that this is a very, very important thing that you have started. I know that now Makhaya Ntini have been put somewhere. Some of us have been wondering that you did take this as cricket South Africa web players, and then after that they are no longer there. There's no one taking care of them. Their skills are not used. I'm putting a challenge to you whilst you're not at department. There is a player that I'm putting to you that you must see and try to check where he is. It's in Zondeki. I'm having an interest as a young player who was a very good cricket player, used to be in some of those private schools in East London. But, yeah, they call it. But as I'm sitting here as a chairperson of sport and recreation, I'm suspecting that he's very frustrated, can do anything that a young somebody is doing when he's frustrated. I'm not saying that he is he's taking Nyaupe or whatever, but I'm suspecting once a player, when now is no longer there, this program, development problem that you're talking, we must, as these members, assist to tell you that being people who are representing people down there, I've identified and I'm aware that he is nowhere, and I'm suspecting I met him very frustrated. If we can try to trace in another provinces to check when we are doing this thing, that I don't know, how do you do this selection upon clubs or schools, especially your basic education. But as leaders, we must tell you, because one other time we have assisted this committee with one player who did come with a medal from here, Pal, that when we saw article of In New Age that, hey, this boy is now nowhere and is doing not what he's supposed to do, this committee took upon upon Luvo. It's one of other roles that we are having as this committee member. When we are seeing one of us that can be a star presenting our national teams today, we have that Luvo that we have taken him some in the corner doing naughty things. So I'll appreciate that when you are doing that, we know you are not a department, but because of this development of hubs that you are looking at your rural townships, you can assist us when we are pleading things that we have identified one of the sons or daughters of South Africa. With those words, I wanted that name. I must give members chance to talk. Honorable Mshongo, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Manana, Honorable Musi, Honorable De Whip, in that order. Honorable Zoma. Thank you. But I'm impressed with your presentation, but we need to get some other gaps that we don't have information on hand, because whenever we're going, no one is presenting this good work that you are doing.
Thanks, Chair. We welcome the presentation. And Chair, I want to emphasize that we're saying, you know, for us, we have a good presentation, but for us, we have to go and see it for ourselves, especially on oversight. I'm from Soweto and wanted to ask several questions, but my first question is, under governance. Maybe in future, Charles proposed that let's have names, you know. You're saying members of council, we have 14 members. Maybe we must have names, and then for us to see how are we doing, even in the board, independent directors. Can maybe share in future even their profile, even the different committees as you entailed in your presentation. So I wanted to find out on another slide, talent acceleration program, how much is it allocated, how much is the total budget for that? Because vis-a-vis, you check, you have 2% for coach, 30% for administrator, and for amateurs, your budget.
Thanks, Chair. For the talent... Okay, apologies, Chair.
Yeah, we'll be giving chance to respond according to your presentation.
I'm still... I wanted to see exactly what is the gap vis-a-vis the planning program here, talent, and your amateur games. And I wanted to find out each and every on your pipeline presentation per level, how much are you spending? And it will be assisting us exactly to gauge where the gap is. So I wanted to support that we must change the mindset for us to make sure that the transformation takes place. But how far are we when we deeply engage on transformation, we could get South Africa? Yes, the mindset is we must do that, but how far are we out of 10? When we gauge ourselves, how many percentage are we of 10? Maybe are you 5? Are you 2? I'm from Soweto, as I was stating, and I support EHUB strategy, which is, it seems will work. But I wanted to find out, you know, if we can engage ourselves, for an example, which I spoke of facilities sometimes. I think one of the biggest challenge, if we accept, facilities are the problem. In Soweto, we have only 3 facilities, and plus minus 1.8 million population as a Soweto. But we have only 3 facilities. In Soweto. And I think it's one of the dynamics that we must come up with, a situation which we address that, because only 3 facilities for 1.8 population, we have only Elka, Brandfisher, UJ in Soweto. But when you visually check the Sentin area, the affluent area, the schools which are facilities there, in Soweto you don't have that. Now how far are we going? Or maybe what engagement do we have the issue of school cricket in townships? When are we going to implement, or when are we going to realize to see that this is happening? And so we're in different communities, urban vis-a-vis rural areas. Yeah, another question, I think this is my last question. I want to leave another question for my colleague. Chair, I wanted to find out how are we going to close gap between, I think, between competing. You've stated here that blacks are competing 4 games, whites competing 20 games, and then per annum. But what is the strategy that you have for us to close the gap? Thanks, Chair.
Just to thank my colleague for leaving me some questions. Chair, as you correctly identified, I think we've got a lot to talk about, so it's not, you know, if you'll allow me just a little bit of time, you usually are very generous, and the report has been all over. Although we try to push, of course, the subject of transformation, which we cleverly and skillfully try to do, you know, we always say that we're all about transformation and that, which I think this whole room is about. But we're about sustainability of the sport as well. And I think what we've missed or we've jumped very quickly over is that the revenue forecast for this year is a loss of a quarter of what we had year on year before. So where all the other years we were growing, we now lose a quarter of our revenue. In that same finances, we see an increase of almost a quarter of expenses, almost a third actually, of expenses. And if I was administration, whilst being excited about what we're doing on transformation,
I also worry about the fact that we still have fuel in the bus, you know. So before we get too excited, let's interrogate the figures. Let's understand for ourselves at what costs are we willing to drive the whole setting of transformation, but not worry about finances. If we look at legends that are being shown on the glossy brochures, which are, I think we've spent a hell of a lot of money on glossy brochures, there's about two different glossy ways in which we're boasting about our transformation. But yet, it's money that could probably lessen the expenses and increase our revenue. My problem sits here, though, Chair, is that in 3 years, are we the most distant out of the top five codes in SASCOC, in the top five sporting codes, is Cricket SA, and yet our least relationship, even you have said it yourself, Chair, now, is with Cricket SA. I'm not sure where it is. You know, I'm not sure why it is, because quite frankly, I think we're on the same team. We all want to try to find a way in which we can fight the perception against transformation. Now, on these glossy brochures, which I talk about, we've identified probably five or six legends. You correctly mentioned Bakai and Tini as a legend. I see he's off the. I see he's not on that glossy brochure. My hero, Mfuneka Ngom, that I always use as an example on transformation is, and I'll tell you the interesting part about Mfuneka Ngom, is that we go to town in this brochure to explain about his ankle injury and why he couldn't play cricket. What we don't go to town to explain is how did a guy with a genetic injury go from a provincial team without really playing any provincial cricket into the Protea team. You know, we're so quick to try and prove this transformation point that, in my personal humble opinion, I worry what pressure we put on this poor guy's ankle, and I worry about whether we didn't in fact disable him from enjoying what could have been a very lucrative career in sport. Now, when we look at legends, we do have legends. We have, as you correctly say, Mackay and Tini. We have Barry Richards. We have Graham Pollock. These are people that are still alive. What are Cricket South Africa doing with these legends? How are we treating our legends? How are we using our legends to give back to the community or to you know, impart some very big pearls of wisdom? We talk about sports tourism, and again, part of the presentation was the whole thing about the EPG. Chair, I think it's going to come a time when us as a committee have to challenge the minister on the penalty, not necessarily on punishing people that don't transform, but the penalty. We must invest in sports tourism. In fact, sports tourism is the way of the future. To ban South Africa from sports tourism is to score an own goal. And I say that the minister is scoring an own goal in this, because if we could have World Cup rugby here, we could have World Cup cricket here, we create jobs, we create more excitement. We were on an oversight where the school teachers said, and they are the ones that are on the forefront of transformation, they said we will not get children participating until they see heroes. They have to see heroes that they align with. So when I see a glossy brochure, I want to see the six top black cricket players in this brochure. I don't want to see one and one from before and one from next year and one. I want to see everyone being showcased. But we must guard against creating two classes of players, because what we find naturally happening in Cricket South Africa is that every single person that plays in the Protea team, in my, again, my humble opinion, is there on merit. You can't look at a player and go, ah, oh, he's a black player, he's a non-generic black player, he's a white player. Every single person, and this is where Cricket South Africa, whether it's the players, whether it's the administration, we're getting it right. Where every single person that takes to that field on merit. And we must ensure that we don't create two classes of players through a system, as I always call it, the quota system, where we're saying we have to have only five white players in the team. And it was said before that there will only be five white players in the team. We must say that those, if we can get it to a position where every single person plays on merit, and we're going to get there, we must get there, this is our job, is to ensure that we get there. We get there that we don't create a player where he's got to ask himself every time he runs onto the pitch, is he a quota player or is he a player on their merit? Because what I'm saying to us now is that every single player deserves to be on that field. He must have our backing in saying that he's a very good player, he's a player of merit, and we back him because he's a player of merit in our national team. And that's why I congratulate Cricket South Africa. We do have a great group of people that are playing cricket right now that are highly ranked, that are giving us great merit, that are there playing on merit. Now, the leak in our system is club cricket. You speak to any professional, you speak to any manager, and he'll tell you that club cricket is at its weakest. Now, I've looked again, I've glanced through this nice, lovely brochure, and club cricket is mentioned. It's identified as a very important tool and part of the transformation. It also mentions two incentivizing ways in which they're going to get, Cricket South Africa is going to get club cricket to participate. But where does it show what Cricket South Africa is going to give to the club to empower the club to be more competitive? I often used to read in the newspapers as a cricket enthusiast. I would look at the Saturday Star and there would be the club cricket results of the local club. Don't see that anymore. There's that distance again. Club cricket, for all intents and purposes, is now becoming almost the weakest link in a chain, because we source our players straight from school. We take them into a provincial franchise. We must try and bring back more to the club cricket. In terms of this international format that the president is trying to introduce now, I support it wholeheartedly. You know, I think that it's about time that Cricket South Africa looked at almost like a super franchise where, you know, they've got the Championship League, but maybe where we look at the top, we look at almost like a super rugby, we look at the same on a local format. But we must do something then on a provincial level and in the spirit of what our sponsors have done on the Momentum or Standard Bank level, how do we still keep another format alive? And this is where I think transformation is very important, and this is where I think the goals of transformation are far better achieved on the provincial level, is when we must look at a one format of the game, almost like the Vodacom League of rugby. And I hate to speak sponsorship, but I'm just saying in terms of what the league objective is of the Vodacom Rugby, we should maybe do in a cricket format. I am excited about this format, but now here's another thing, Chair. We see on transformation the female participation, and again I have to commend Cricket South Africa as a forerunner in promoting the women's cricket. I think we need to get more involved, Chair. I think we need to visit more. I think we need to attend more matches. I have tried to ask the President for tickets on one or two occasions or say that we'd like to participate. I'm happy to buy the ticket. I want to buy the ticket. But I also need to know where these matches are taking place, how we can get more involved in the matches and that. Because we need to go see the Women's League. We need to see what's happening on the provincial side of things. And more importantly, as I say, please, I challenge us on our next oversight to also go and watch a club cricket match, to actually see on a club level and speak to the cricketers on a club level. The last thing I would just want to end off with on a sour note is the match fixing. And I think on the match fixing side, I think we've been very silent. I can't say we handled it badly. There's no precedent really. I think in the old days, when match fixing first came up, there was a whole judicial commission. I think they put out a whole lot of proposals, and I'm not sure if we're following those proposals. I hope we are. But what I need to find out is, are we confident that we've actually nipped the issue in the bud? Are we sure that we protect our players from the environment? So it's very hard to do, and I really don't envy the position that the administration is in. But it is something that if we look at some of our players that get picked off, these are talented young players that actually had a future within the cricketing format. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Document. Honourable Manana.
Thank you. Good morning.
and an apology for arriving late. So she said, Sidney, although I've arrived late, I've browsed on the presentation. I was just looking on the overview of governance. As you were talking about the transformation in our resolution that for 2013 that have been implemented, on your key successes, you have talked about the increased number of Black African players in franchise and national teams. I just want to check how many numbers in the whole country, in all 9 provinces, of those Black African players you are talking about, since you have implemented already. And I think it's just that in Cricket South Africa, they are lucky because I can see they do have these sponsors, the current sponsors that they have. Some of the sporting codes they don't even have. They will tell you that we have tried, we did not get any sponsors, but Cricket South Africa has got more than 20 sponsors if I look at their documents here. And we also know that sports is underfunded. You have tried your best by getting, but they are assisting you on with those sponsors. So Cricket South Africa, and how are you going to reach, I'm requesting you to go deep rural areas so that we can see cricket sustaining this ongoing cricket development program on the rural areas so that you can maintain. I know exactly that the sponsors cannot run away if they see you busy with the continuing with the transformation, because the transformation we're talking about here, we are not talking, it's broad. We are not talking about color. We are not talking about DNA. It's broad as I'm mentioning it. Because when we talk about the transformation, we want to see cricket to be transformed in rural areas. We don't want to see cricket at a national level only. We must see it at the local level, especially on the rural areas, as I've mentioned. And the other issue that has been touched by my honorable member here, Honorable Bergman, the match fixing. Because we know the former test wicket keeper, maybe if we can get the highlights from you, I've never heard you touching about the former test wicket keeper, Mr. Soleli, that he was also found in that match fixing scandal. I just want to hear from you, because I don't believe on someone or other people. I want to hear from you. And the other issue is this issue that recently, the Free State Cricket Union issue that has apologized about the dangerous playing surface. What was maybe the serious problem that drove them to even call off the match? It was that was supposed to play on that day. Was it because of the surface, or it was heavy rain? That's why they called the match. So I must appreciate about the KFC mini cricket that you are giving these children an opportunity, those 6 to 12 years age, to participate in cricket. But you don't want to see them on the suburbs. You want to see them at the rural areas as well. I know it's there, but it's not visible. I must say that. And I'm happy because the manager of transformation, he is here. You need to work hard on the issue of transformation matters, because there are cricket in each and every province, and there are presidents of cricket in each of the province. I think you must have a measures in place so that you can sanction those provincial presidents of cricket who don't
want to see this transformation happen in each and every province. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mani. Honourable Somo.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it and welcome the presentation this morning, particularly as you have mentioned quite a lot of improvements around the transformation. Some of the questions have been asked by my former agencies, but I would like to, I come from KZN, and I would like to find out exactly where these hubs are in KZN. So that when one goes outside now into our constituencies, we can also be able to listen, because otherwise one would just be speaking in the air. I would be very much pleased with it. My son is a coach in the urban areas, and he always complains about the fact that he is coaching in the ex-Majesty schools, and in the, even then, you know, there is nothing around other schools where he is. So it would be interesting, really, just to find out exactly where these hubs are, so that when one goes into our
thank you, Honourable Veteran Shomu. Honourable Musi.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, quickly, I just wanna comment on what the presentation touched on. That you know, before an ordinary school in a disadvantaged area or a rural area could play a game, a private school would have, you know, played 19. That's what you said. And at Jefferson, that's an indication that we still have a long way to go. That's showing us that you know, the level of inequality that is happening, that is taking place in our country. But Jefferson, that would be something that I would want you to comment on. But the other thing, Jefferson, that I want to sit on, it's something that was mentioned by Honorable Manane about you know, rural areas. And Jefferson, you know, every time we come or there is a federation that is here, we talk about the rural to them. And I when I was sitting alone at home, Jefferson, I might have, you know, thought about this type of rural that perhaps we do not understand the rural area in the same way that somebody else might see a place as a rural area, which I don't see as a rural area. If I may give an example, Jefferson, that if you go to Worcester. Worcester is not as big as Lingsbeck, but those are the towns around the Western Cape, Jefferson. Now, if you are to measure them according to their reality, they are not the same. I'm saying, Jefferson, that maybe we need to indicate to federations that in terms of rating areas as rural areas, perhaps they should do what the Department of Education has done to rate, you know, rural areas according to their rurality. That this is rural deep, this is semi-rural, this is blah, blah, rural, this is a rural town. Now, the Department of Education has got something called the quintiles. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 quintiles. And perhaps if we can have that in federation or in cricket, then we begin to know which to prioritize. That's my personal plea. But Jefferson, I want also to have, you know, cricket to be specific when they speak of certain things. If you speak of regional performance centers, this is a committee of this is a national committee. We travel all around the country. We definitely know where those performance centers are if you are to mention the name. And tell us that this is a performance center that is located in this area, so that when we visit, like Honorable Tomo indicated, when we visit constituency, we should go there and do our oversight at that particular center. That's my other question. But my third question, Chairperson, would be who is actually responsible for the maintenance of this regional performance center? Who is responsible for the maintenance of it? Just be specific about it, because you know, Chairperson, if you just indicate that we have a regional performance center in an area, and then it serves the surrounding schools, and therefore it is difficult for us to get to ferry learners from one particular area to that. Which are those areas? Tell us about the name of those areas, those regional performance centers, so that we should know about them, Chairperson. And lastly, Chairperson, I just want them to be also specific about their pipeline program. Just be specific what that is for, where that is going to happen. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mose, Honorable Barakom.
No, Chair, I also appreciate the work done by CSA. I'm just going to touch three broad areas. The first is the hubs, or put another way, your pipeline. That is a good thing that you are doing, but I think you must still try to not neglect the need for township schools to participate in cricket. But for the gap that is there currently, I think the hubs are a very good innovation, because they give an opportunity for kids that want to play cricket, and there are few, they can't belong to a club, to can participate in the in cricket. I think that is a good innovation, and it is quite clear that it's a pathway. It shows that you are the champion of cricket in South Africa. The second point, I think you have explained it, because otherwise we were going to be worried. You are declining revenue. But if that is standard in terms of you recovering over several years, I think, and if you say you think it's a healthy situation, we leave it like that, because, I mean, you are the champions of this sport in particular. The third area is the one that is important to us, transformation. And I think you are doing very well. Your franchises are doing very well, because we are seeing more African players emerging. I mean, for an example, Petru Kwayo came through the franchises, and now is one of the best all-rounder player. In fact, he's going to compete with our retired veteran, because that young chap is quite good, to think. He came through franchises. Now, the problem in South Africa is that there are people who bring in negative things. Even at the level of franchises, there are people who are bringing negative things there. For me, that we have moved in terms of transformation is when more Africans participate in cricket. And we should not even be worried that they'll say, why are we creating two kinds of players? Because certain sections of this community did not participate in sport. Cricket was exclusively white. And down the line, if we are starting now, we need to ensure that we attract those that did not participate. I don't think it will be correct that we should do away with overemphasize merit. Merit, yes, but we need to ensure that deliberately or we apply positive discrimination to ensure that we achieve the necessary numbers. In fact, EPG is about that. EPG is about that. It's just that we are now looking not only one aspect. We are looking several aspects. But there is no way that we are going to stop ensuring that we want to see more Rapadas, we want to see more Bavumas, we want to see more Maharaj, Tilanda, Petuguayos, we want to see more of them. It's not correct that we must see them and then all of a sudden they disappear. They are no longer in the pipeline. We don't know what is happening. We need to see more and more of them coming. And I'm quite happy that you took the penalty by the minister positively. Because my worry, and when we discuss this thing, is if as the minister, has got no stick to can utilize to beat the federation to comply. How are we going to force compliance? Because in fact, our worry, our worry is that we think there is a serious danger of resistance of even the gains that we have achieved currently. There are serious dangers of all of that work that we have done as CSA being reversed. Because those people that are anti-transformation, they are there. They are there. They are even putting this thing to some of the players who are even thinking that their solution is to leave South Africa, go to England. More and more players who think that because we are introducing color, they are leaving the country, which is something that I thought you need to just educate to us. What is the extent of that disillusionment? Because it's there, and it is brought in by these people that bring doubts in the form of saying, no, they are for transformation, whereas they are anti-transformation. They are there, they are many, and they are involvement of late. But I think... generally speaking, cricket out of the five, you are doing very well. It's most unfortunate that the minister had to punish. And I'm happy that you are saying you now understand the targets more better, the scorecard more better, because that is what it was intended. But I don't think it is correct that we were supposed to simply not do anything, or the minister not do anything, because the minister is responsible. And we are supposed to do oversight, push the minister more in terms of achieving the target. With that, we thank you very much, really.
On development of e-cricket. So I'm suspecting that all our questions are relevant and you'll assist us when we ask questions that maybe were just ignorant. It's your job to educate us because we are not specialists in your field. So don't feel that sometimes some of our questions are just questions that we're supposed not to answer. want that, that's why we have called you with those words. Feel free, give us information in order that you must arm us when we are getting out of this meeting. We'll know what we are going to say, even to our counterparts. We are going for a reserve for a month. So we'll be meeting with municipalities, we'll be meeting with the ordinary communities, coming to our constituencies, asking ABC, information is the power. Without information, we can narrate our own stories. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What we'll do, an array of balls have been bowled to us. We'll bet accordingly. What I will do is to give the members of the delegation to respond to questions. A number of questions have overlapped. And then we'll ensure that in that way that all questions have been answered, and we'll take any follow-ups if possible. The Vice President is going to kickstart, then the CEO, Max Jordan, Zola Tama next to me, and then I will see if there's anything left. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Mr. President. Madam Chair, I'll kickstart with the first question that was asked, which is the amount for our talent acceleration program. The second question, which was the expenditure for the pipeline per level, as well as the expenditure for accelerating Black African talent as far as our system is concerned. Chair, I have to be honest and say at this moment I don't have the exact figure because all our programs are interlinked. So we don't have a specific amount for talent acceleration program on its own because all our programs, irrespective of what the program aims out to do, the basis of that program has transformation in it. So a specific figure from that program will have to go towards accelerating talent and growth in the program itself. So we didn't come here with the exact figures. We would have to go back to the office to now go into granular detail in order for us to find the exact figure for the expenditure for talent acceleration program as well as pay level as far as that pyramid that we have on the slide there, on slide 17, I think. So we don't have the exact figures, but it is possible for us to finish your committee with those figures, Chair. I'll say, if I answer the third question, which was how far are we with regards to transformation on a scale of 1 to 10, and we haven't come up with a figure that we all think we would agree to as a delegation, but I would say we are at 4. Madam Chair, reason being that transformation is a huge animal to tackle. We are still falling pretty short as far as where we would like to see ourselves, as far as women participation in cricket is concerned, as far as casting our net as wide as we can in rural areas and townships is concerned. One of the points that was raised was with regards to township schools cricket. We are actively involved with schools. The problem is getting teams in schools. If you go to your traditionally formed cricket schools, I'm also from Gauteng, Soweto. So to because I used to be president of Gauteng Cricket, I know my area pretty well. If you go to a school like King Edward's will have 6 teams per age group. So they will have A to F, under 13, under 14, under 16, under 19, and so forth. If you go to Soweto, for instance, to answer the fourth question, tying up with my answer now, which is the number of facilities in Soweto, we have more than 3 facilities in Soweto. You know of the Elka, the Bramfisherville, as well as the Protea Glen one. There is a facility in central western Jabavu, which is now a White Elephant. There is a field in Morris Isaacson School, which was probably one of the first fields to be built in Soweto. It's a White Elephant. There is a field in Chakubua Primary School in Soweto, Zone 7, Meadowlands. It's a White Elephant. Where I'm going with my answer, Chair, is that we have erected fields in the past.
But because cricket participation in the township has digressed for various reasons other than just segregation, cricket participation has dwindled. And hence I said when I started with my explanation as far as RPCs and hubs is concerned, we are now adopting a strategic approach in how we want to grow cricket. Erecting fields and nets is no longer just the solution to the problem. If we have the numbers and a specific area produces dominance as far as those numbers are concerned, then we will go to that area, erect the field and nets, because now we are pretty sure that that field will be used. Currently, the fields that we have, not all of them are being used. The Protea Glen facility has cost Gauteng Cricket Board over 4 million in the last 3 years, and not a single ball of cricket has been bowled on that wicket. And that's a fact, Madam Chair. So we are trying very hard not to waste the little money that we have. The facility in Protea Glen, I'm sure if you've driven past it in recent times, you'll see that the fence is gone. No ablution facilities or clubhouse can be erected because of the soil of the area. So in a sense, what I'm saying is that in people trying to help us, in Salga trying to help, in the British American Tobacco trying to help cricket, and specifically Gauteng cricket, by donating that field and demarcating it for cricket, they didn't necessarily help by choosing for Gauteng cricket, because we could have told them where we wanted that field, where kids could have used, where the community could have benefited. So instead, we had a field that was for Cricket South Africa's throat, and that field can't be used. Because of A, where it's located, we have no cricket players in that area. B, it's because of the type of soil, as I said. It's a problem for cricket, that area on its own. Over 4 million has already gone down the drain, trying to maintain that field. As I speak, I speak under correction because I haven't checked with Gauteng Cricket and the current president as to what the plans are for that field specifically, but I know that cricket cannot continue in that area, so they need to come up with a plan of what to do with that field. The strategy in terms of closing the gaps, the strategy that we have as Cricket South Africa in terms of closing the gaps are these various programs that we keep introducing. As we all know, with us casting our net as wide as we can, that net does have holes in it. So every now and then we will lose administrators, every now and then we will lose players. But we are trying to make sure that by introducing new programs, measurable programs as we keep going, then we are able to catch those that are falling through those holes, through those gaps, as far as our systems are concerned. So it's still pretty early for us to measure exactly how successful we have been in terms of capturing comparing the numbers in terms of where we come from and where we are right now, because only now we have formed, as our chief executive has alluded, a database where we can now record each and every player from mini cricket all the way to the pro tier. Only now that this happens. So as time goes, Honorable Chair has pointed out the name to us in Zondek, only as time goes do we now start going back and saying, there was this sort of player, there was that sort of coach, there was this sort of administrator, and we go back to go look for those. And we have programs in where we're engaging with people that used to be involved with cricket. I'm one of those myself who is an ex-player, got lost to the system, came back as an administrator, and luckily today I happen to be vice president of the organization. So we are working very hard in bringing back all these ex-players, the likes of Victor Mpitsa and the likes of Monde Zondeki, the likes of Johnson Massa. So all these players, Barry and them, they're all involved in the system in one way or the other. They might not be seen on TV the way you would see a Makhaya Ndini, the way you would see a Mfune Gonga, but they are all involved. Not all of them would be getting money directly from Cricket South Africa, but some are getting assistance from our sponsors. Some are getting employment from the likes of SuperSport, the likes of SABC. So there are various programs that we are working on together with everybody that we have partnered with to try and make sure that anybody else who was involved with cricket in the past and got lost to the system is brought back to participate, get remuneration, and to basically compete, to basically give back as far as the programs are concerned. The sustainability of our programs is pretty much intact as far as the four-year cycle is concerned. So the four-year cycle that we work with is basically designed in such a manner that we are sustainable as far as our programs are concerned. So where you see a loss in 1 year, that the loss that you will see might be, how do I say this, negated in, if not the following year, in probably the second year, or sometimes even the third year. So I'll let Harun to come in there and jump and assist.
Madam Chair, it's an important question that the Honourable Member has asked, and I think it's very important that we understand, and at the expense of repeating the earlier point I make, I'm going to try and do it again. Our revenue is a function of the incoming tour. The majority of our money depends on which country comes to visit us. On the other side, we've got the expenditure base, which we don't want to go up and down because of the revenue that is low or high in a particular year, because we want to sustain the program. We want to keep the same level of activity. So if you go to this slide that shows the financial overview, have a look at the cash that we've got in the bank that we've kept from previous revenues that were good. And in this particular year, we spent 900 but generated 600. It doesn't worry us. Because last year, or the last 2 or 3 years, we had developed that revenue and we had kept the cash, knowing that in the third year or the fourth year, it's going to be a lot less revenue. This coming December, January, we've got India touring, which is another big year. So our revenue is going to be back up there. So we do not take 1 year and say we only got 100, so we can spend 100. If our expenditure needs to be 150 in this current year, despite our revenue being 100, we'll spend the 150. Because we know what we generated in the last few years, and we know what we're going to generate in the next few years. So we keep our programs going at the level. We don't let our programs go up and down. It's an important point to understand. And it's purely a function on which country is coming to tour us. The more high profile the country, the greater the revenues we generate. So we work in a block of 4 years, not in a block of 1 year. Madam Chair, one of the other questions that was asked around match fixing, and it's perhaps something we should have spoken to, but the reason we don't have it there is because we're at the tail end of completing our investigation. I think it's important to understand a couple of things. One is there is a very, very strong education program that we've got across the entire player system. Everybody is aware, there's reporting mechanisms, and it's very unfortunate that some people still get tempted into doing something that they should not. And that's when we go into the investigation or the prosecution mode. We don't want to go there. We prefer to educate and prevent. We spend a lot of time in that area. But those who then get themselves caught into something that they shouldn't have, we have to deal with. And we've dealt with a number of players, and we're at the last tail end of wrapping up on one more individual. We've sent out sanctions or bans ranging from 20 years to 2 years, depending on who was involved to what extent. It is a fact, Madam Chair, that the ICC, that even the public, even the media have really felt that we've dealt severely with this issue. We certainly adopt a zero-tolerance approach insofar as any form of corrupt activity is concerned. We cannot risk the integrity of the game, and we've dealt in the best manner that we possibly can. We've reported regularly to the DG and the Ministry as well. They are also satisfied in the way that we've tackled the issue. And the mere fact that you don't see it being reported so widely, in my view, is testimony to the fact that even the media and the fans are satisfied or believe that we've dealt with it in the best possible way. So I think we should have reported on it, but it's something that we've dealt with it over the last 12 to 18 months. I can go so far as to say, Madam Chair, that this is not a local problem, it's a global issue. Some of the investigations have taken us abroad, because these syndicates don't operate in the country. They operate from abroad. And there is no color or there is no religion in this thing. Whoever that they can get as a vulnerable individual to get to the end, they will corrupt. And education forms a big part of what we try to do in terms of protecting our players. There was a comment on we are lucky to have sponsors. I think it's fair to say that we work very, very hard to make sponsors confident that we govern well, that we administer well, that we will account for every cent that we spend, and that you can have the confidence that what we say we're going to do, we end up doing. And I think it's testimony to the fact that a lot of sponsors have shown confidence in cricket, in the success that we've got to date, in terms of our performance, in terms of our programs, and therefore they've been very supportive.
Can you explain the manner in which we utilize that funding in order to benefit the rural areas at the bottom of our system?
So I think one of the documents that we might have handed out talks about transformation and a bottom-up approach. We have gone down in spending, and like Mr. Moroe has said, we'll come back with the exact numbers, but in excess of $200 million is spent on development activities, going right down to the bottom. We've just approved another $107 million additional from now to 2020 to go further into rural areas, into development programs, to cut across, and this hubs program is something that we're putting our hopes on, because, and in the words of the DG, he believes that's the game changer, where we battle with schools that may not be able to provide opportunities for kids. There's club cricket. The reference to club cricket is also true. It's a fact, Madam Chair, that a lot of children these days are what I call digital kids. They play the game on handsets. They don't go out into physical activity. Part of the challenge we've got, even the print media is not carrying those club scores as they used to in the past. They've got to be encouraged to carry franchise scores, to carry our semi-professionals, so they don't go down to the club level. So we are trying through various programs. Even club cricket has come onto our radar, where we fund them and we are trying to promote it, and we're getting there. So as I was saying earlier, we started back from an area where we fixed the boardroom. We fixed the admin, we fixed the funding challenges. We're now down to the nuts and bolts, and we're in an area where I hope that in a year's time we can come back and show you a lot more success coming out of the hubs programs, coming out of even as far as schools and clubs cricket is concerned.
Madam Chair, I will then look at the issues around the hubs in the disadvantaged areas. It was a program that was started from the 2003 Cricket World Cup legacy. Many of these facilities, like the Brown Fisher Oval, was a donation from land leases that we had to put in every cent to convert old mine dump into a cricket facility. And we can go along. There are 58 hubs. We now are at with a new injection. 21 million, will be 64 hubs. So it would be better then to give the list and addresses of these hubs from the outset. But there are two hubs that I want to highlight. The one is in KwaZulu-Natal, is the one at Mlazi Comtech. We had to do the excavation work, build a clubhouse, so that cricket is played in a very densely populated area. An area where we have half of the population in Umlazi unemployed. And that is where we are. And if we overlay the map from Stats Arata on the poorest of the poor, it coincides 100% with our hubs. The other issue is, speaking about deep rural areas, the poorest of the poor, that is in Malabulu. We have spent a lot of money there. We were about to launch a facility in April. The disappointing factor was the grass is now has not grown. It is an issue of soil fertility, and it will cost us now a further $900,000 after we spend $900,000 to get that facility.
So it seems here the name of the place?
Malukutu. In Mpumalanga, Bushbuck Reach area. We would love to have a suspension area. I think that is a broad overview, but what we commit to, that we will send you the list of the hubs and the arrangements.
Are you able next to indicate in terms of numbers of black African players in the system, the provinces, the franchise system, that would be active on any particular match day? That is a very straightforward answer, that it is within our match rules, that within every match, three black athletes must play. Six blacks must play. So therefore, we are very comfortable that the majority of the participants in any match will be majority black.
I was just going to add the one question that I think, and I know you're going to do the sweeping up, Mr. President, but the Free State pitch, from time to time, and it's very seldom that it happens, and we do get embarrassed by it, it happened that the pitch wasn't even, which meant that the officials used the reserve day, which was yesterday, to play that match. So our rules do allow for that. We've got a technical committee that assessed, and there will be a sanction for someone that didn't do what was supposed to be done. But thankfully, the game got played, and the visiting team won. So perhaps justice prevailed.
Thanks, Chair. I also just wanted to highlight, Honourable Chair, that we do have a specific focus as far as rural cricket is concerned. What we haven't done pretty well to blame ourselves in is reporting rural cricket in our presentation. We do have a South African rural cricket team, and this team is more than 80%, I stand to be corrected, I don't know the exact figure, but it's more than 80% black African, this rural team. And what our honorable members might be surprised of is that we do have Proteas who come from rural cricket. The likes of Dale Steyn comes from rural cricket. Mashan Dilanga comes from rural cricket. Haino Kuhn comes from rural cricket. We have a specific program in the Northwest called the Sandless Spinners Camp. This camp has turned all farm schools into proper cricketing schools in the Northwest region. And it now encompasses all races. It was initially intended for black African kids, but because of how successful the program has been, you had now your white farmers who started complaining in that area to say, but our kids also go to farm schools. Why are they being ignored? So we then decided, let's include everybody in this program, and it's a very successful program. We have a Protea in the likes of Eddie Lee, who comes from that program. So we do have a specific focus program for rural areas. It's not where we would like it to be, but we do have it, and it is work in progress. It will definitely get better with time. The more funding we can be able to generate for all our programs, the easier and the more visible all of them will be. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honorable Chair. I would like to invite the members to come to the Free State, particularly Bloemfontein, where we will be having women's cricket playing. All provinces will be playing in the Free State, starting on the 30th, up until the 3rd of April is the closing. So it's vibrant, it's happening, the fixtures, perhaps I can advise the program coordinator to look at the fixtures of the federations, because we do have them in the website, the information is there. But I'm going to request Mr. Max Jordan to send all the information that Mama requested, the member Romo, where are the hubs in the KZN, you know, all the numbers, where are the RPCs. We do have all that information. Who are the members of the Social and Ethics Committee? Who are the members of the Audit Committee? Who are these 14 council member committees? We will request the office to send through to your secretary. Those are available. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just to add, the earlier question was about the Women's National Team. They will be hosting India in Poch starting on the 8th of April. So there will be international matches for our women.
Thanks, Mr. President. Madam Chair, my president has asked me to speak more about the programs that we have as far as our pipeline is concerned. So what we have done is to basically give a general overview as Cricket South Africa of how the pipeline system works. But what we also do is that we encourage each and every affiliate member, which are our provinces,
to be as creative as they possibly can be when it comes to the programs that they would have in their respective provinces. So in essence, what I'm saying is that a program that you might find in Eastern Cape that works for that area, you might not necessarily find in Gauteng or Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and so forth. But what we definitely do is that in all provinces, we do cater for all age groups, from mini cricket, as I had earlier said, all the way to your semi-professional cricket. We do cater. So we start kids at mini cricket, where they get taught the basics of the sport, how to catch, how to field, the type of equipment that would be used, where all kids get given an opportunity to participate on respective or on different positions, where all kids get an opportunity to bowl, they get an opportunity to bat, and then we move them now to under 9 and your under 11 cricket rather, where they now start playing hardball cricket. And now that's where we now start to focus a bit more on the respective skill that we might be able to identify in this individual. But also, what we do is that as Cricket South Africa and the Pipeline Committee, we have encouraged our presidents to look at their bylaws and how they can adopt some of the bylaws that we have in mini cricket to bring them into your under 9 and under 11 cricket, because we also feel that at this age, kids are not necessarily specialists. So you should afford them an opportunity to participate in all positions as far as this sport of ours is concerned. So we are looking at various ways, innovative ways rather, to make sure that participation is equal on, or as far as this level of cricket is concerned. And then we've got, as I said now, your RPC and HUBS programs. Now these programs now start specifically focusing on age group cricket. This is now under 13 cricket, this is now under 15 cricket, under 16 cricket, as well as your under 19s. This is what the RPC and HUBS cricket will obviously cater for. This is now from a development aspect, because you still have your school's leagues running concurrent to that. And then on the third stamp, running concurrently with these two programs, would be our provincial programs that we have for all these players that we would have identified on each and every level as far as age group cricket as well as school cricket is concerned. So we have programs for your under-13s, we have programs for your under-15s and under-16s, under-17s and under-19s. And one of the reasons why you might not see national teams being formed as far as these age groups are concerned is because if you look at our counterparts, if you go to India, they don't have your age group national teams. If you go to your Zimbabwe, they don't have. If you go to England, they don't have. So if we were to form a South Africa under 13 or a South Africa under 15, it would just be a ceremonial thing. They won't have any other nation to compete against. That's the reason why it's not there. It's not that Cricket South Africa does not want to form them. They would not have anybody to compete with. So we move kids from RPCs and HUBS into what we would call school cricket, and obviously individuals that extraordinary in talent, guys like your Themba Bavumas, guys like your Tamiso Logiles and the Lonwabo Tsotsobes of this world, the Makai Ntinis, we then give them bursaries to go to your traditionally formed cricket schools, where now their skills are going to be, and opportunities given to them where we feel are going to be enhanced, and where they can be looked after in a better way for them to become better cricketers. This is all at school level. And then outside of school level, we have your club competitions. We have your tertiary competitions. I stand to be corrected, Arun. I think we're spending about 40 million, if I'm not mistaken, in club cricket annually. We're spending about 40 million annually in club cricket. And Honorable Chair, club cricket remains a social form of cricket in the country. And we as Cricket South Africa, we have sort of accepted that club cricket is a social form of cricket. In the last 10 years, club cricket has only produced one pro tier for us, which is Dane Villas. This is somebody that doesn't even come from the rural areas or townships. But in having said that, We do not say because club cricket is not producing proteas, we want to cancel it or we want to stop funding it. We continue to fund it so that we do increase the participation of the interest levels of cricket in our communities, as well as to make sure that the facilities that we have erected around the country get used and they benefit our communities. So club cricket remains a bugbear for us, but we want to put more focus into it to see how we can make it stronger and work better for cricket. One of the problems that we have that with all these programs that we have in the system, it's hard to get your competitive cricketers to go back and play club cricket, because at the same time, some of them are playing for provinces. At the same time, some of them are playing for semi-professional teams where they're being paid. Some of them are playing for your franchise teams because now matches are being played on Sundays, and club cricket predominantly plays on Saturday and Sunday. So that's where the problem is as far as the weakness of club cricket is concerned. Whereas in the past, you didn't have all these competitions. So it was easy for the likes of Jimmy Cook, after playing for Transvaal, to go back and play for Old Ed. Today, you don't even get Stephen Cook playing for Old Ed because he is that busy. When he's off duty from the Proteas, he's playing for the Lions still on a weekend. So he's not able to play for his club. So needless to say that the same applies to our black African players. That's why you will see that club cricket in townships and rural areas, the performance of our black clubs is relatively weak, so to speak. But we are working strong with these guys and putting focused attention to make sure that they are able to compete. If you look at Soweto Cricket Club, you take it back to 1996, Soweto Cricket Club had 15 teams on any given Sunday. There were 15 teams leaving Elka to go participate everywhere in the province as far as Gauteng is concerned. If you come to Soweto Cricket Club today, it only has 3 teams, as if they are lucky to form 3 teams that are going to go out and compete. That's because participation, as far as cricket in our township and rural areas, has dwindled. One of the problems that's facing us is time. Our black parents don't have time to wait for their kids while they're practicing after school, or to wait for their kids to play during the week cricket. Black parents have to leave work late, come back home, help the kids with homework, prepare them for tomorrow, still cook for the families, and prepare themselves as well for the following day before they can worry about their kid being able to get cricket practice or a cricket match. That is the reality that's facing us. Even with kids that we give bursaries to, they don't have their families coming to support them. They only have us to come support them because their families have other focuses elsewhere. So we try as much as we can to work hard to make sure that we bring all our kids up through all these adversities and turn them into Proteas. It's a very tough job that we have at hand, but we are trying to make sure that without complaining, we get it done, which is our slogan for transformation, get it done. Thanks, Jack.
I'm going to sweep the president. I'm looking at your team as if I like
just a few issues to comment on, Madam Chair. One, you made mention of facilities around Alice in the Eastern Cape. There's a very good facility at Zalamans in Alice that's a product of CSA. Unfortunately, there's bad planning also because as part of the legacy program for the 2003 World Cup, there's another facility just below Lovedale College which was built but was never used because of bad, poor planning. Then the issue of ex-players. If you have listened to the Vice President when he was giving his input earlier, what we're doing now, we're looking at cricket, life skills, and profession. So that if a player cannot make it as a cricketer, at least he can have a career. That is why we have strategic partnerships with certain universities so that as they become better players, but also they become better professional people, so that there is life outside of cricket for them. They are skilled and they are professional, so that they can begin to compete. Because the biggest challenge that we have, in as much as we produce legends, in as much as we produce ex-players who might have been top players in their playing career, but we cannot at the same time all of them accommodate them in our system. We try our best. But at the same time now, what we're doing is to ensure that they have career paths that they can follow up outside of cricket. The issue of facilities, Madam Chair, it's one of the factors that begin to challenge us, especially as we begin to expand the game, as we attempt to ensure that we ground transformation in every corner of our country. And the issue of facilities, let me give a very simple example. A rugby player can play on any facility, on any patch of ground. They can practice rugby, they can play rugby, but if you come to cricket, you need a specialist ground. For instance, what we've done in the past is to have, even today, those cement pitches where you have a slab and then you put on matting on the slab. Now you have most of our black players will be practicing on such fields. Now those who are advantaged enough to have a proper field to practice on, the skill set and skill level can never be the same. Because if you play on a concrete pitch, there's not a lot of variations in terms of how the ball reacts after it has been bowled. Now if you get to a proper wicket, cricket wicket, now you have to deal with the conditions of the wicket, weather conditions, how the ball behaves after it has been bowled. So you need a specialist skill for that. And your preparation as you are growing through the ranks of the game in your concrete pitches does not lend itself for you to now become skilled enough to do this, to respond to these challenges on a proper cricket pitch. So the issue of facility is very, very important for us. And we have a partnership with the Department of Sport, Department of Basic Education, that was signed in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. We are trying to unlock the resources that are sitting in the Department of Basic Education, the resources that are there at the Department of Sport, so that we can go in there with cricket and say, this is where we can go, but can you take over in terms of facilities? And also, we're trying to engage SALGA. We've been trying. We're not very successful because we do not have one. There's a means to maintain on a daily basis the facilities. We do not have the means to ensure that we have personnel at those facilities. So that becomes a very huge issue. And this is made worse by the situation at schools, especially township and rural schools, where you have the the national norms and funding for schools, which give you the five quintals, quintal one up to quintal five. Quintal one to quintal three, those schools are declared no fee schools. It's a very good initiative. But what it has done, it has minimized the resources that could have been used for sport. And now schools do not necessarily prioritize sport. What schools do, sport will become a sort of an aside, by the way. Otherwise, that is not now the core issue. And what it does then, it limits the reach that sport ought to have and used to have in terms of being based at schools. Because currently the schools are not focusing on sport, they are not spending a lot of money on sport, they are not spending a lot of time on sport because of the challenges and also the demands that are placed on teachers in terms of delivering on the curriculum, neglecting sport. That is why the so-called former model schools will continue to have an advantage because they have the financial resources to employ people to focus on sport. Whereas your ordinary township and rural schools do not have that kind of a financial muscle. So that becomes a challenge that begins to inhibit the process and progress towards transformation. And then the issue of transformation to us is very broad. I think Honorable Manana has referred to that point. It's not about black or white. It's not about players only. It's about the whole system. And we're going to reach a stage where we can say, now we have achieved transformation if all the enabling factors support all our people, all our players equitably. So that a player can begin to compete with any other player because they have the same facilities or similar facilities. They've had enough opportunities to play and display their talent. And they also, they have had all the kind of support that comes from the home, from the school, from the community. And then they can begin to compete on the same level with any other player. And I always say this point that we will be able to say we have achieved transformation when a player gets into the field of play. He is not referred to by any other description except the fact that he is a player, she is a player. But you get to that point after you have made intervention strategies to address the imbalances that you are inherited from our unfortunate past. You cannot ignore that fact. You need to take it on board as you try and drive a transformation program that caters for all. Because if you don't do that, you neglect those challenges that emanate from our past. Your attempts are going to be superficial, they're going to be temporary, they're not going to be sustainable. So once we say a player gets into the field of play because it's a player, nothing else, then what shall said, I mean, we can say we've reached a stage where we can say transformation is successful, but that has to be underpinned by access to quality facilities, by access to opportunities. And unfortunately, Madam Chair, as a federation, we don't have that capacity to ensure that we have these kind of facilities that we are looking for. We depend largely on local government. We depend largely on provincial government. And because most of the time we use fields that belong to local municipalities. And we depend on them to maintain those fields. The skills there is not necessarily there. For instance, the preparation of a cricket wicket is not just cutting grass. You need a skilled people to do that. Then the last aspect that I think I need to talk to is the issue of the KFC mini cricket and its visibility in the rural areas. I think we need to, maybe I need to explain how we operate. We have our affiliates who are running the programs on the ground, and we fund the programs through the affiliates. And the KFC program takes a process from school against school, from area against area, from the regional festival up to the national festival. And if it does not seem to be reaching out in other schools, I think that's a challenge that we need to take, but it is intended to reach out to all schools. But the challenge might also be linked to what I have stated earlier, the issue of rural schools closing, issue of rural schools not having teachers capable and willing to run this program, but it depends on them. That is why maybe the Department of Sport and Education, they need to think very, very carefully about the issue of how do we deliver sport in our country. Because we as a federation, we depend largely on volunteers, not on employees of the federation. The employees are fewer than the volunteers, and our programs are delivered mainly by volunteers, which also begins to tell you that there's going to be a problem there because you do not have a lot of control, accountability on volunteers. Whereas if we could have a situation where in each and every school you have people employed to deliver on sport, then you can have a situation where it's easy for us as a federation to go and deliver programs because there's somebody that takes care of these programs. As of now, we're only depending mainly on volunteers. Madam Chair, if some of the questions that were asked I have not been touched, I think members should indicate as such so that we can try and cover as much as we can. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, President. I'll be going back to the honorable members, except that I didn't hear anyone from us asking about the challenge people like you're disabled, in tennis will be seen that they are playing tennis through their wheelchairs. I don't know with the cricket. And also, on your response, it's not a question, it's just a suggestion. I'm suspecting the Department of Education and clubs, as this committee we know, and SALGA, we know the challenges, but I'm suspecting that your pipeline program and what you want to do, if you can just leave it to the basic education to municipality, we won't achieve a fruitful result. You need to be proactive. As I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about that. I'm very sorry, honorable members. I've heard everybody is talking about his or her constituents, but I'm supposed to have a constituents according to the committee. All is my constituents, but you can testify that I've done that in Bombo. So I'm just thinking that in Eastern Cape, one of the biggest regions is OR Tambo. And in OR Tambo, if I can, even if it's outside this meeting, but if the employees of different provinces here can sit down and try to talk and engage you when we're going to our constituents to check what can we assist going to municipalities, maybe schools will be closed or not, to try to assist, to tap from your program and see that can't we assist that in certain region where there is a sport and municipality, that we must have something like clinics which are supposed to be done by maybe clubs or by the Department of Education or Sport. But we must try to assist to chip in, because if we are talking about your MOU, there are so many MOUs that we know that have been signed by our sport, by your education. Now today are telling us also, but if we cannot work together to try to close gaps, never mind who are you, you are not a department of education of sport, but you have somebody who knows that it's social cohesion, we do get it from sport. So I'm pleading that you must allow us to talk to you as individual constituency member to check, and after maybe we did get this information that will be sent to our secretary to check where we are thinking that we are not there. Maybe we'll be talking out of not knowing how far have we gone in each province. So everyone is here is coming from a province, so we need to get that information. And if we're coming back to you, I'm pleading that you must be accepted to share problems on from our own provinces, and we must check what is a basic education is doing, what is sport is doing, and why there are these gaps between your good friends. Honourable members, any follow-ups? Honourable Mosi, Honourable Bergman, Honourable Song, Honourable Manana, on that order. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. And just quickly, Chairperson, I'm not sure what is it that the Cricketers Federation is going to do to engage with provincial governments and municipalities so that a similar situation of this wasteful expenditure is avoided. I mean, you would understand that the more that, you know, building a facility in West Njabahu and in Morris Hills, I'm not sure, because even if you look at the proximity of the of, that area and that school. You know, it's just a stone throw distance. What, how do you engage with them, you know, as municipalities and provincial governments, so that we don't repeat a similar situation? And the last one, Chairperson, I would like to engage with the contact person of that wonderful program of yours of farm schools. It's a good one. I'll just what if I get the person to contact. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, thank you very much. You know, notwithstanding that this is a factory of spin, considering the cricket is where cricket is born, just so I'm not misunderstood in terms of the finance, what I'm trying to say, if we look at the, if we're going to gamble our finances on a four-year cycle, every 4 years, you have to look at the, you have to look at the loss after a 4 year or the payments or the income that's not generated. And you have to say to yourself, we have to remain at a specific level to carry on getting that sort of income. And I paint a scenario for you. Let us suggest that we were almost a year ago, where everyone was calling, you know, saying that our cricket was on the edge, et cetera, et cetera. Let us say that in that year, in that schedule, our competitors are of the B category rather than the A category. I think it's important to note that our revenue would drop. I think it's not something that I have to spell out. I think it's something that we should all know by now. What are our safeguards for that? You know, now, my problem is the relationship with the sponsors, and it's going to remain the problem, saying that we keep sponsors on board, you've got to keep cricket competitive. Now, another thing in terms of transformation and in terms of what the minister cleverly does is that we find ourselves in a situation where we sit saying we want transformation, this is how it's going to happen, and we then say, right, Cricket South Africa, over to you, what are you going to do about it? Now, Cricket South Africa are talking about building relationships with SALGA. I'm saying, what is it that government should be doing to try to help? Because I'm sure it's not just the responsibility on your shoulders. I'm sure it's not just up to Cricket South Africa to assist in transformation. I'm sure that there's things that government can do to even the playing field, to try and create that competitiveness. So, you know, I'm sorry I have to spell it all out. I was just hoping that it would be taken up on the first part. Thank you.
Just a follow-up, Chair. I wanted to find out, you have 58 hubs, and in your presentation you're saying 6 million for maintenance. Do you think it's enough? I was just calculating the 2%. It's not enough. And that's my view. I'm not a technical bureaucrat like you guys, but in my assessment, 6 million is not enough to maintain hubs, because it's a 2% each. When I've divided, if my memory serves me well, you stated clearly that it's 21 million, one hub, and which is 1.2 billion for 58 hubs. 1.2, it's 58 multiplied by 21.
21 in total?
No, it's 21 for the subject.
Not each. Okay, no, it's fine. But now the 6 million is not enough. I still state on that. And I wanted to find out what agreement you have, because I know I'm from Soweto, and you stated clearly, I'm aware, I was not speaking of white elephant. I'm aware that, but what arrangement do we have on new facility that we are installing, so to say, that with municipality? What arrangement do you have, or let's say the donor, if the support donors who are building that hub or a field, what memorandum of understanding that you have to agree upon? Because I believe issues of maintenance, what causes a facility to a white elephant, because municipality are not involved.
Thank you. Another thing.
Thank you, Chair.
on my follow-up question, I didn't want to do this follow-up, but because they've touched the Malikutu, I have to. Chairperson, I appreciate the 900,000 that you have assisted the Malikutu. Why I'm saying this is that the Malikutu Cricket Academy, that's why I was having raised that the provincial president must be sanctioned or they must be penalized, is that previously this Malikutu Cricket Academy, there was a lack of support at all, because some of the cricket players, they even took a decision that you're no longer going to play cricket because of that pitch of the field for the cricket. They were having some challenges with their field. And another thing, the women, I've had the invitation now that they're inviting us on the 30th about the women cricket players. Let's hope you don't put yourself like the other sporting codes that are underpaying the women. Because otherwise the gender commission will be after you, because there is this tendency of underpaying the women while we are participating in one sport. Like the women cricket players, you may find that they are underpaid. Let's hope they are not underpaid like the other sporting codes, as I'm saying, that the men are getting more paid than the women.
Thank you. It's running out of time, but we need to be patient, because I was given this whole afternoon while was still having other things on the agenda. But this is a good interaction to your president.
Madam Chair, to the question on whether 6 million maintenance costs is not enough, it is true, it is basic maintenance that we can do, and it links to the previous point that the President made, that we're limited in our resources and we can only do that much. So it's about as much as we can spend, and it's basic maintenance. It's not the kind of maintenance or the kind of upgrading that we would want to do. There was a question touched on whether there can be contributions from government or municipalities. We would most welcome that. There's no doubt that we are taking a great responsibility in terms of delivering on our transformation goals. It is fortunate that we believe in it. It is right that we want to do it, so we don't mind it, but whatever assistance we can get, we can certainly multiply the successes that we would be able to do. So there's no doubt about where our hearts and minds are, but we're limited by the resourcing that we've got. The point about the revenue, again, it's taken, and I want to assure the member that we are very, very careful in our financial planning. We've got some long-term contracts in place. We built what we call the Future Tours Program. We've got it in place until 2023. And that's how we work on these four-year cycles. By the time we come here to 2020 or 2021, we'll be talking about the next four or next eight-year cycle. So we do plan well in advance, and we are very, very careful, I can assure you, on the financial modeling and planning. Some of our sponsor contracts, we've managed to convince them, the KFC one, for example, do a 10-year deal with us, because you can see the benefit that is going to young kids. We've got some 100,000-odd on a weekly basis that come and pass this place. And KFC are most encouraged by that success, and they've done a 10-year deal with us. So we've got some confidence that we'll be able to get those long-term revenue flows into place. Kate, do you want to talk more?
The issue on Malikutu, that point is noted, and it is a thorn in our flesh, because the Malikutu issue just never ends.
And that is why we've committed to build this oval. We have the buy-in from our member, but as I've indicated, I was told that grass is a living organism. It needs to be fed, and unless that happens with fertilizer, it dies, and that is what has happened. But we are quite willing to engage, and I think the assistance of the honorable member will help us greatly just to kill this beast in Maraputo.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to burden the President with one more point that I would like him to speak to, because I think it's a good story. You might remember 2 or 3 years back, we were really challenged by what was happening on the international front. Cricket South Africa was kind of reduced to something smaller. There was a so-called Big Three that was being formed. You remember there was a lot of noise in the public space, and the President has worked very hard in that circle over the last few years, and I think we're in a place now that is a very proud one for CSN. I'd say the President must say a few words on it.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Indeed, if you recall, when we came here in 2014, even in 2012 when I came here before I was president, the challenges that were facing us were governance challenges. And whilst we were bickering amongst ourselves, whilst we were having our own governance wobbles in the country, we sent a very wrong message to the international world that we are unstable and we cannot be trusted. As a result, Cricket South Africa, as a major player and a key role player in international cricket, lost its place. We were muscled out of the center. That's how I used to put it. We were muscled out of the center because we were unstable, we had governance challenges. But we worked very hard as the current leadership to ensure that we win back our place in the sun within the ICC. And as I speak to you now, we are an influential player within the ICC setup, that is the International Cricket Council, and we are advancing the cause of world cricket. If you recall 2014, there was a takeover by the Big Three countries, and they were in the process of reversing all of that so that we ensure equity and quality and equality within the international cricket. And going to the next meeting of the ICC in April, this April in Dubai, we have in principle accepted and approved the constitutional amendments that are dismantling what happened in 2014 and putting in place a system based on equity, which is going to also ensure that there's going to be an equitable distribution of the funding that comes from the ICC. Without wasting your time, Madam Chair, we are back in terms of where we belong in terms of influencing, playing our role within the International Cricket Council. And maybe you will... After April, you might see in the media as to what is the extent to which we've been able to disband and dismantle the 2014 resolution that were actually taken over by 3 countries. We have played our role, and we are very, very proud to say what is going to happen has our own input to a very large extent. Thank you, Chair.
Let's welcome Honorable Freddy Adams. Honorable Freddy Adams, who has been presenting this committee in all matches which are around Cape Town. This morning, before anyone did arrive in this meeting, I was jealous of that. I complained to these leaders, saying, hey, we know that he loves cricket, used to be part of this committee, but these are members of this committee. So I must tell you that these members, they will join you now in whatever cricket, especially with you always go when it's around Cape Town. They've spoken themselves. They were not aware that I was already jealous of you, that we are always presenting the committee, but they are really members of the committee.
but it's because we are passionate about sport. There's nothing wrong. Honorable members, I'm suspecting was done justice, and like soccer, they did agreed that they are sending in their features, and if any member want to do it oversight, sometimes people are thinking that we're going there. Yeah, we do enjoy a game, but we want also to check these players. It's one of our oversight. Sometimes, as this committee, we are not getting that opportunity, but maybe it's not your problem. It's a problem that the committee must take it up, because the oversight is not only to going wherever, but when those players are there, we need to see and charge them and do whatever. But today, before the members arrived, I was on behalf of them, and they have said it from their mouth that maybe even if it's just 4 tickets given to Jefferson to give the members, and it will be rotating, we'll appreciate that. That some will be very busy on those days, and then I'll communicate and check. Because sometimes these tickets, I end up, I'm not accusing you, officials, I end up in the officials, not with us. What you call, jazz festival, tickets were supposed to be in the members, I ended up in the officials. So it's a reality. So I'm saying that in front of my committee, I would love that we must get a standard ticket. If you know that there is a match, and especially when we are around in Cape Town, but even if not, you'll consult, you'll talk to me. I want to take responsibility, because I want to see that we are rotating. We are not saying that, Freddie, through your relationship, you cannot talk to the cricket officials. We are not saying that. So, but I'm jealous of my members that never ever got that chance to do that. So, but the president and the rest team, they promised me that they were not aware whether we do have an interest to go and watch our players. I'm suspecting that today was taken all these hours we deserve to have this information. This is not the last time that we'll be calling you, but we are well informed and well educated. This is not our field. It's your expertise are with you. And we are saying that also we'd love, when you're doing this development, to have to take those legends who are just only playing, but you can assist, not in all of them, that at least they must get a professional on the cricket. We'd love you to do that. But all in all, we cannot be satisfied about the time, but we had an ample time, and as a chairperson, I've seen that my members, colleagues, they've asked, and I'm suspecting now this is time that I must say thank you very much. We still need you. Together we can do more, irrespective of MOC, Memorandum of Understanding, MOUs that are not implemented, not implementing by your good self and other structures who have taken decisions that will monitor that and will be getting in that space. Because we can't talk of social
cohesion about sport and just sign J, just in J, and then don't implement. Thank you so much, President, with your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, members. We take our national mandate very seriously. We will never disappoint our people. Thank you for inviting us.
Honorable members, we still have two items in the agenda. I will hear from you. This meeting of the first, you can take 2 minutes. If you want to chat with the leaders, Honorable members, the first of minutes. It's 14 March. It's 21 February. 28 February. It's 14 March. And then I'm suspecting that we are all agreed by mere looking at this report, we need to interact with it as individuals in order that SNAE has done a good job, but as leaders of the committee, we must all go through it in order that tomorrow we must discuss it. It must be the last item of tomorrow if we still have time. Let's go to minutes of 21 February, Boxing South Africa. Let's go to page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Hello. Yes, Honorable Man.
Thank you. I'm just checking with my colleagues here. I don't know because I'm not a master of English. The page 6 on the Ms. Chimanana stakeholder motion by Mr. Ralehuma under on that paragraph, the last paragraph, she proceeded to say that it will be appreciated if the committee secretary could add what had just been raised. Or maybe there's something that needs to be removed here on the what has been just been raised. Maybe if they can correct me on that. I think even the secretary can just correct that. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. 7. Can we look at the matter of arising in order that when we're adopting, we adopt with everything? I'm doing the other way around. Page 1, page 2, page 5. Can somebody adopt the minutes with the collection? Honorable
Chairman for adoption.
Honorable Member. I second. You know why she's laughing? The minutes is always proposed by Honorable Malaz and Honorable Manala. So you must not be amazing.
No.
I will assume that the tradition is continuing. 28. The minutes of the 28. These minutes were off. Chair, South Africa Prison Strategic Plan Governance and Committed Development University Sport. Let's go to page 1. Let's go to page 1. Page 2. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. If there are no matters behind me, I would love somebody to adopt, unless there is a correction or matters arising, let's adopt this minute. Honorable
Chair, I'm not adopting, but there was a concern raised and it's not minuted here that you must have USASA and all other sporting codes for our next meeting, but we didn't give a date. Remember, they were claiming that they work with other sporting codes, and there was an issue that I raised. That, and then we proposed that in the future we must call all of them in one meeting. But it's not noted here. And I think it's one of the matters that we must pursue in the future.
He's saying that in a meeting, he proposed that the USAS are saying that they are working with USAS. Talk to
Yeah, it's USAS. Remember, Chair South Africa claimed that they are working with all, but he didn't mention USAS. They didn't mention USASA, and now we wanted a follow-up meeting whereby we invite all sporting codes with USASA. Not all specifically, but the issue was with Chess South Africa.
She doesn't understand. You want to rewrite and correct what we are saying. It must be corrected. My back aches again.
The other concern and challenge is page 5. Maybe we can put number 10. Under concern, it was omitted, so to say, the statement that I'm talking about, that USASA and Chess South Africa must be called in one meeting in the near future.
Okay. members? Do you have any problem about that? Okay. Adoption of the minutes? Ms. Manan?
I adopt the session.
Thank you, Honorable Manan. Any second?
The has not allowed me to do this.
Thank you, Honorable Strong.
In this comment, we will always have from two members who are very young. Sometimes they will be on one toe, and sometimes they will be friends.
Put in March. Page 1. Put in March. Page 6. Page 7. Honorable the whip, you see in page 7. That Honorable Chauka was MEC in Northwest. Don't you know why I'm saying that note to that?
Page 7.
Do we have a right to pronounce what you told us as a study group? I don't think it's a secret that the former MEC Chauka now is going and Honorable Manan to handle the subcommittee of sport of parliament. I'm saying when I'm reading this, I'm sure they've seen that he has been involved in sport. Next. I'm saying that's why you told me as chairperson what was your decision in the whips about Honorable Chauka. So when I'm reading this on page 7,
okay.
Yeah,
I'm saying I did appreciate what now we have discussed, and I don't think it's a secret. I don't know. Because if it's a secret, I've already revealed it.
What is the secret?
ANC, Mario, they are given your responsibility of the Committee of Parliament. Okay, let me hold it. Page 7. Okay.
Let me just say that I think it's a long time coming that someone from this committee actually did represent parliamentary sports. So I think it's something that should be welcomed, and if that's a decision, we're only happy to hear that type of decision. So whether you've revealed something that you shouldn't have or not, we will be very respectful about it, because I think it's about time that this committee had a say on the parliamentary sports.
That's why I was thinking that it's not a secret. Supposed to be in the ATC as well speaking, and because I've had some other people did come to me welcoming that of not the members of the ANC. So I'm suspecting that when we were discussing, it was had by in the multi-party caucus, our whip chief whips of opposition, they do see it. Because this thing, it was started there, and so if now it's a change, maybe let's wait to, okay, maybe let's wait, but it can be a good news. Take it as if I didn't get pronounced, but we can appreciate if it can be like that. Yes, for Manana to be that, because is reality that events sometimes were being left behind while was committee of sport. I finished page 7. Any corrections? Any adoption of minutes? Honourable Manan?
Thank you, Chair. I'm adopting this minutes with some corrections on page 4. It's not correction. I think it must be. I saw something here. That's false. On the ZAA, a proposed of the question. Just to add the E. Huh? Must be the one where it says. French.
You say it's French. Tell
but
us what does that
see.
Mean. Provided you get to the second.
You know what I've noticed, especially in the last minute, the way that these minutes are written, I'm commending Sune.
Yes.
You know why we've been doing a blah blah, but the way those minutes are written, very professional,
mm-hmm.
and the content you do here, why there was this and that and that. Thank you so much for that. The meeting and then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye bye.